Hello and welcome to Boring Conversations. I'm your host, Valerie King, multimedia editor with The Driller. Today I am joined by Dale Jenkins. Thanks for being here, Dale.
Thanks for having me. It's a pleasure to be here.
Pleasure to have you. Dale is the owner of Southern Underground, based in Lincolnton, North Carolina, and he started the business in January 2019 after building up 2 decades of experience in horizontal directional drilling. And that's what Southern Underground specializes in across the Carolinas: utility installation and HDD consulting and training, in addition to erosion control methods, finish grading, and excavation. So Dale, can you provide me with an overview of your drilling industry experience?
Well, I started in early 2000. My father-in-law was a crew foreman for a natural gas subcontractor, and they needed bodies on the job site. So within a week, I was thrown in as the water boy of the HDD crew, not even knowing what horizontal directional drilling was. But I had the license to drive the truck and the will to do it, I guess. So I mixed mud and I drove the water truck to the fire hydrant. That was all part of my job. But I jumped in head first. I wanted to learn every job on the crew, and I wanted to be able to do everyone's job. So anytime somebody was out, I was able to fill their spot. Within about a year, I was offered a foreman position, and I was only 22 years old at that time. I stayed with that company for 15 years, and I became, you know, the crew foreman and later on a supervisor over all 4 of their directional crews. We did everything from service shots to river, lake, interstate crossings. We later on specialized in rock drilling, and we used mud motor, all-terrain system, and air hammers, which, you know, the rock crew was the crew that I directly stayed with most of the time because it was the bigger machine, bigger projects. So after about 15 years of that, I kind of got bored with the same old routine and decided to make a change, try something different. So I took a job at a local set of dealerships for an equipment manufacturer, and I became the trenchless specialist. It was a job that they didn't have, but they actually created after we spoke, and something that they had wanted to do for a long time. So I did training. I did demos with their equipment. I handled product support, and I was part of their sales team. I was able to share my knowledge and experience with all sorts of operators, new ones and old ones. So we actually created a training facility, and we used factory PowerPoints and custom-made PowerPoints that I made myself. And we had outdoor hands-on training. We put some 6-inch pipe in the ground, and we would, you know, run the drill stems down through it just to let the operators get familiar with the way the machine works before we put them out and, you know, expose them to all the dangers of, you know, underground utilities and things. So we would then go, after a little bit of that time, we would take them out and go on a live job site and start being productive. But one of the things that always, you know, got me in the industry was you have people that weren't trained properly, you know, training other people that are new, and it's a domino effect of unsafe habits and, you know, bad practices. So that was kind of the interesting part. I enjoyed teaching people the right way, and hopefully they stick with it. So I did that job for about 4 years. And once I left and started my own business, I actually continued to train for them as a subcontractor at their various dealerships. And I actually helped train the new specialist to make sure that, you know, everything was a smooth transition. So, and now I'm 2.5 years deep as a business owner. So it's definitely a full circle.
Why did you decide to launch Southern Underground in January 2019?
Well, the timing was perfect for me financially and, you know, economically. At that time, it was good. I had always wanted to start my own business, and I set myself a goal to do it at the age of 40. I actually missed that mark by a few months. I went over by a few months, that was. But I wanted the satisfaction of, you know, paving my own way and, you know, taking pride in your work and actually the work that has your name on it. Because really, at the end of the day, your name is what you're working for, and that's what you're, you know, what you're riding on, and what your business supported by.
And then, of course, COVID-19 hit last year. So how did the pandemic impact business for you, especially considering it struck pretty early, just about a year after you started?
We were lucky enough to be on a big project at a military base when the pandemic started and throughout most of it. I had partnered up with a friend of mine that had started his own company about the same time I started mine. And he was, you know, doing the same kind of work. So we both ended up, we had about 3 employees each, and we just teamed up and we split everything down the middle, you know, profit wise and expenses, and, you know, ran the project just like that. So we were actually in a highly restricted area that was underground bunkers that they kept munitions in for, you know, for the ships and stuff. So it was a restricted area with a separate gate from the main gate. There weren't that many people in there. And we actually used to joke that there were more alligators there than people. It was all swamp and wooded. So there wasn't a week that went by that we didn't see an alligator.
So, wow.
Yeah. So we had very little contact with other people once we got in there. So they told us, you know, just keep showing up and, you know, stay in there, you'll be fine. So we were blessed. We actually didn't miss any work during the pandemic whatsoever because of that.
So in what key ways does having your own business differ from your years of working for others?
You're the final decision maker, either right or wrong. And you have to deal with either the consequences or the rewards that come with all those decisions. So I'm always trying to think about 4 steps ahead to make sure that we don't forget anything, and trying to set the right order of events to make us more efficient. So you have to be good at time management as well as people management. And I also love the freedom of being able to, you know, plan things in my personal life to fit my work schedule also.
What sorts of HDD projects do you take on? And is it all drilling for utility installation?
Most of our projects are utility installations, but we do bigger jobs, but mostly fiber builds. I have rented equipment and used subcontractors to do some bigger projects in the past. But I also enjoy the local small work as a filler, you know, just because it keeps me home and makes my time more flexible to do things in my personal life, such as, you know, going to an event that my children may have. You know, most drillers travel. So you become kind of numb to being out of town all the time, and you miss so much. So it's nice to have those smaller jobs from time to time that keep you closer to home. So I have a saying that I tell my friends, and, you know, of course, it is a little funny, but I've got one of those crazy marriages. My wife actually misses me when I'm gone, and she likes for me to be at home. So I try to be home when I can.
That is a good thing to have, for sure. And a great point made, the value of having smaller jobs that can give you the balance of being there. So when it comes to getting the work done, what kind of drilling equipment do you use? What kind of equipment do you have? And also, how big is your team?
My company's still in its infancy, especially due to the uncertainty and the slowdowns that came in the industry from the COVID pandemic. You know, I try to keep a crew of 3 to 5 guys, and I have equipment for a range of applications. So we do small grading and erosion control jobs. I do French drains, small excavation jobs, you know, as well as the underground utility stuff. And we have a cable puller and fiber blowing capabilities. So we, you know, kind of do turnkey fiber jobs. I wanted to be versatile, you know, and have different avenues so we could stay busy. So most of our equipment is smaller because I just wasn't comfortable taking the huge risk with big equipment and the cost that goes with it. So even that small equipment, you know, adds up quickly when you start adding trucks and trailers and everything that goes with it, and all the tools and materials that you need, you know, to make everything work. So. But we have found ourselves being asked more and more often to be involved in projects with contractors and actually using their equipment, just as they don't have the manpower or the knowledge to get jobs done. So we've done quite a few of those in the last 2 years also to keep us busy.
So more about training, which you talked about, you did before you opened your business. Today, What does that look like? The HDD consulting and training that you're offering, what does that entail and who are your clients?
I offer a service of training, you know, crews by either their classroom or in the work environment. You know, I come directly to the customer's job site or their office and work with their crews. But most of my clients are smaller companies that are either in a startup scenario or, you know, have a turnover rate within their employees. Because, you know, a driller, they will chase 50 cents on the hour and jump ship and go to another contractor. So I've also trained bigger companies that are looking for the right information to be more productive and safer on the job site. You know, sometimes being able to answer the right questions and have the right information is a big deal in the industry. So we also have done jobs where we come in and we, you know, work with guys and their crews and, you know, as a support role and be side by side with them and help them on certain jobs.
That's great. And also just another way to diversify your offering. So that experience and background shared with others, but also just something else that you can bring. Okay. So on to some examples or an example. What has been your most memorable project since starting your business, and why would you say that's the case?
I had to think about this one a little bit, but I figured, you know, at the end of the day, it all comes down to money, right? So I was contacted by a company that I had known from my past. And, you know, whenever they don't do directional drilling that often, but when they do, they normally call me and he's like, you know, we're going to do it with you, or we're not doing it at all, or something like that. So I really do have a good relationship with those guys, but they had a creek crossing that they needed a conduit put in for power to go to a pump station for the sewer that they were installing. And I went out and looked at the job and I told them I would give them three quotes, you know, one for dirt, one for soft rock, and one for hard rock, just in case, you know, we encountered rock. So soft rock, just for example, would be, you know, sedimentary rock, which would be like sandstone or limestone. And then hard rock would be weathered rock, such as granite. So just to kind of simplify things for everyone. But they ended up telling me to give a guaranteed price just to get the job done. So I told them, I said, well, for me to do that, I'm just going to have to end up charging you for the hard rock price, assuming that I may encounter hard rock. And they said, that was fine. Just go ahead and do it. So I didn't think that it was going to be rock anyway, just from, you know, me looking at the job site. And I really didn't think there was a chance it was going to be hard rock at all. So here's a secret of the trade, just to kind of fill in the blank here. When I go out and look at a job, I look at the natural trees in the area and the creek itself to see if there's, you know, any signs of rock or, you know, the lack thereof. So evergreen trees will grow in shallow rock, but a hardwood tree can't because of the roots. So if I go out and it's all hardwoods, you know, you're probably safe on the rock as long as you're not going like super deep, you know, deeper than the roots would be. And then I look at the creek and I look at the banks. If it's high banks and the creek's pretty wide and deep, then you're probably dealing with dirt because the water was able to cut the path that it needed for flow. It wasn't restricted by anything. Does it make sense? And if the banks are shallow and sloped, there's probably rock, you know, pretty shallow because it has, you know, cut to that level and that's as far as it could go. But anyway, they accepted the quote and we ended up getting the job. It was a 200-foot shot, putting in a 4-inch pipe under about a 10-foot wide creek that had 4-foot banks in the middle of nowhere in a wooded area, nothing but hardwoods. Okay. So we did the shot in about 4 to 5 hours. We did not hit a single rock, you know, on the whole shot. We made out like a bandit on that job. And it was definitely the most profitable day we have had so far in the company. And I actually picked up some silt fence work on that project. And we ended up doing that the very next day. So the customer was happy at the end of the day. We were happy. We still do drilling for them anytime the need arises. And I actually have a quote with them right now to do another bore. So everybody's happy.
Yes, that worked out well. That is the best kind of story where the business keeps coming back and it's goes as good, if not better, than you hoped and expected. That's thanks for sharing too the your ways of kind of assessing the space through trees. I have never heard that before. So yeah, I find that very interesting.
Normally when I tell that story, I tell them that doesn't mean that every fence line in America has rock under it because of cedar trees. No, that's just because the bird put the seed there and that's the reason there's a cedar tree.
I see. Very good. Thank you. Mm-hmm. So next question, considering your more than 20 years worth of HDD experience includes management of projects from planning stage to completion, and really then some, because we've talked about training as well in consulting, what aspect of the work do you enjoy the most and why?
I enjoy the projects that are not normal, not the everyday project. So I like the ones that everybody else runs from, just as long as they can, you know, physically still be done. But, you know, back when I did demos on the equipment, it was great because nobody ever demos an easy shot. It's always the hardest shot of the whole job. So when I go out on a bigger job, I survey the topography myself. I draw up the pre-plans. I try to do the math, the calculations, where we want to set up, where we're going to exit. I really enjoy the planning stage of doing it. And then, of course, you know, I enjoy, you know, the completion of actually making your plan come true. So I'm kind of a math nerd. And, you know, back when I started drilling, the guy that was locating the head or tracking the head had to do the math. In, you know, usually, I mean, I did it in my head. I don't know how other guys did it, but, you know, you just do the quick math in your head to try to figure out your angles and how deep you're going to be on the next rod or in, you know, the next few rods. But today, the equipment has changed so much that, you know, the electronics do it for you. So it is much more user friendly and it's easier to learn if you don't know it. But I miss the old days too. But one thing I'll add about the newer equipment, I hear a lot of old guys, they say, well, you know, it's too easy now. It's you know, you're taking the guy's job out of it. And my answer is always like, you know, it's like having a huge toolbox that costs you thousands of dollars that you've spent all this money and, you know, you've got all these nice tools and you always grab the crescent wrench or the, you know, the hammer and the channel locks, but you won't use the socket set and the wrenches that you have. I want to use every tool I've got to make my job more efficient and easier, you know, for me.
So thinking about the future and you talked about technology and how that's changed, keeping with that theme, do you have any advice to share with fellow drillers who are considering doing what you did just over 2 years ago and starting their own business like you have?
Make sure you know, where you're going to work and who you're going to work for. Don't start your company without having at least some sort of work lined up first. You'll find yourself scrambling to stay busy. So make sure you get a signed contract anytime you are subcontracting or use a subcontractor. Read every word of it. Make sure you understand the terms of the payments and the conditions of the contract. My wife has gotten a told you so out of this one because I didn't read the fine print once and it cost me a little bit of time waiting for my money. Don't go out and talk about or let your crew talk about, you know, who you're working for or where you're working, because if the wrong person hears it, they'll try to come in and take your work. They'll try to undercut you. And the fiber business especially is a dog eat dog business. People will go out and they will try to take your work in a minute. Don't get too confident in what you're doing because it can haunt you very soon. A utility strike, you know, you could just be a few inches away from where you are. Always verify your locate tickets. Check the area for utilities. Common sense goes a long ways on this one. I mean, if you see a ditch line and there's a gas meter on the side of the building, but there's no yellow paint, that gas line's not in the air. It's, you know, be looking for it. So, and the last one I have is you're only as good as your last job or project. You know, memory in the business is very short term.
I love that list. Thanks for sharing it. Much appreciated. I'm sure our listeners will take some stuff away from that. And many will be nodding their heads as they hear.
Yeah.
Last question. What sources do you turn to for inspiration and education as you move your business forward and HDD and everything that you do?
I'm a member on Facebook, groups like People of HDD, Ditch Witch Underground, Vermeer Underground. I'm a member of the Fiber Optic Association, and I get newsletters regularly, and I read the articles. And I take classes, you know, from time to time just to make sure I'm up to date and everything in the industry, make sure my certifications are up to date. And of course, you know, I check in with friends that are in the industry, and we talk about what's going on and what's new.
Well, thank you for sharing your story and thought leadership, Dale. Before we go, where can our listeners connect with you or learn more about Southern Underground?
You can find us at our website, southernundergroundllc.com, all spelled out. And we're on Facebook at Southern Underground LLC. And our email and other contact information can be found at either place.
Great. Well, listeners, for more drilling industry insights, visit our website, thedriller.com. You'll also find additional episodes of the show there or wherever you get your podcasts. Just search Boring Conversations and hit subscribe. Until next time, this has been Boring Conversations. Thank you for listening.